Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap Podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Our podium predictions were completely wrong again, but I couldn't care less with such an exciting and also unexpected race. Today, we review the Chinese GP. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone to episode 85 of the Fastest Lap Podcast. So, is the Mercedes era of F1 dominance over? This is a question many people ask after qualifying with Ferrari beating them by half a second. Your thoughts on qualifier?
Yeah, it was a very, very interesting qualifying session. I think the result was one that we really didn't expect. Ferrari were utterly dominant in qualifying. Bottas, who qualified third, the leading Mercedes was over half a second behind Vettel, in pole position. And it was a really, really exciting qualifying session because the two Ferraris were very, very closely matched. Initially it seemed that Raikkonen had the upper hand, but then once again Vettel on his final run managed to pull out the best lap. Did very, very well. But no question, I mean, the gap between Ferrari and Mercedes after qualifying was quite a surprise to me.
And you kind of feel like this season we are back in an era where tire temperatures are hugely important for the performance of the car. And when you get it right, you have really a good advantage over your competitors. And if you don't, you really fall behind. I think last time we had that was 2012, I feel, where we had like 8 different drivers winning the first 8 races. And you kind of have the feeling again, as I said, in Australia, maybe Lewis Hamilton was able to switch the tires on really well and got that lap out of them. And maybe in China, Ferrari got it right. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe we will get more variations like that throughout the season.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, who gets on top of the tires where. In Bahrain, Mercedes said that they were struggling with the high temperatures, but they seem to be struggling here in China too. And in terms of the tires, they seem to be struggling. And you know, the Chinese GP weekend, it wasn't very hot at all. So it was quite interesting just to see how big that gap was. And you did pose the question, you know, is Mercedes is their dominance in Formula One over? I would say so, yes. I believe that they still are a strong team, but I think now by no means are they the dominant team. I mean, even in 2017, they were. It was quite clear that they had the overall best package. I mean, they won a lot of races throughout the year. They were the most consistent, arguably, but they definitely had the best package throughout the year. From 14 to 16, there was no question about the strength of Mercedes. this year, it really seems that Ferrari has a car that at least matches them. And, going from what we've seen in the first 3 races, you'd wonder if Ferrari actually have the overall better car this time around and if it's Mercedes who are on the back foot. And I think it's sort of hard for me to wrap my head around that because I've been so used to seeing Mercedes at the front. But we have a lot of different tracks coming up. I think we have Azerbaijan, Spain, and then Monaco, I believe. So yeah. I think by then, and even after Monaco, is Canada. And I know that's 7 races in, but I think... over the next few races we continue to get a picture of who is where, but definitely in qualifying in China it seemed, well, it was so apparent that it was Ferrari who was 100% the team in front.
Absolutely. And now then going or coming to the race start, it seemed like Vettel hadn't really the best of starts. Kimi Räikkönen was nearly alongside him, and he I thought he pushed him quite aggressively against the inside line there. And of course, that meant that Bottas had the opportunity to go around the outside on the racing line, basically, where obviously there is more grip. But yeah, as we learned later, it also had a big impact on Ferrari's strategies. How did you see that aggressive maneuver, or did you even think that it was aggressive?
I don't think Vettel had done anything wrong. I mean, he was defending his position. He was defending his lead into the first corner and had every right to shut the door. But yeah, unfortunately for Ferrari, I mean, I don't think he had, well, he definitely had no intention of getting a Mercedes in front of Räikkönen. I mean, Vettel would have loved if Räikkönen had settled into second and kept the Mercedes and the Red Bulls at bay. But yeah, I don't think Vettel did anything wrong, really. It was a bit aggressive, I suppose, but just I suppose the nature of Turn 1, the angle of it and the speed that you're able to take into the corner, it perhaps can see a bit more aggressive than normal, like you would see normally into a first corner where they have to brake hard and turn at a slower pace. So, yeah, I don't really think Vettel did anything wrong, but it was definitely costly for Ferrari, because Bottas managed to get through, and then a couple of corners later Verstappen managed to pull off a good move around the outside of turn 4 to get into P3, which left Räikkönen down in P4, which is definitely what he didn't want.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, you summed up basically a lot of what happened, or the position changes, at least at the front from the start. And yeah, after that, of course, Red Bull, the only ones in the front of the front six drivers that started on the ultra-soft tires, comparing to Mercedes and Ferrari, who ran the softer tires, or the soft tires, the yellow-marked soft tires. And yeah, the first stint was kind of boring, let's put it that way. I mean, we had Vettel out in front. He pulled the gap, controlled the gap like he was back in his Red Bull days. And yeah, I was quite surprised, I have to say. I was quite surprised to see Red Bull holding at the pace of the soft runners. I expected the ultra soft to degrade much faster.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, we've seen, I think it was 2016, we seen Ricciardo on the super soft tire, and I know the tires have changed a good bit since then, but Ricciardo was only able to go, I think it was 3 or 4 laps before he got a puncture. And I think was he leading at that point, or was he in P2?
He was.
I think he was leading the race.
I think ahead of Rosberg.
Yeah. So yeah, I was very, very surprised to see how well the ultrasofts lasted. I think it was lap 18 where Verstappen and Ricciardo pitted, and it was quite strange actually to see that Red Bull called both cars in. You know, that's quite dangerous to do that, because if you mess up the first pit stop, then you're going to ruin not only the first guy's race, but also the second guy's race who's coming in behind. But yeah, Red Bull did it very, very well. And one thing actually I did notice, maybe you noticed it too, throughout the field, whenever we've seen a pit stop, they all seem to be a bit more relaxed this week. They all seem to be, most of them anyway, seem to be above 3 seconds after the unsafe releases that we've had. We even had one in practice, I think, in China. I think, there was an unsafe release anyway in practice during
Was it Van Dorn?
Yeah, I think it was Van Dorn, yeah, during the one of the practice sessions. So they all seem to be a bit more relaxed this time. Did you notice that?
to be honest, I'm still struggling to find the pit stop times with the new graphics. Actually, where are they displayed? I couldn't. I usually watch the pit stop itself. You know, whether everything looks smoothly, and then looking at the driver exiting and where he rejoins on track. But I haven't really noticed where the pit stop times are on screen this year.
I think they, for like some pit stops, they show it and others they don't. But I think it was kind of apparent from just looking at the pit stop itself that it wasn't a sub 2.5 second pit stop from most of the ones that I've seen anyway. But yeah, coming back to the race anyway, you have Verstappen.
Maybe before we continue, I just want to highlight here, you already said a very good job by the Red Bull team, but throughout the whole weekend, I'd say, I mean, in qualifying, well, basically, so let's start with FP3, the Renault engine of Danny Ricciardo went in a pretty spectacular way with a lot of smoke and flames and so on, and all the mechanics had to change the engine, what was it, 2 hours or something?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the first really good deed of the weekend. And then, double stacking the cars for two times without any errors. I mean, was a really, really good performance by the Red Bull team, also the mechanics and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even the mechanics from Verstappen's car were over fixing or, putting the engine, fitting the engine back into the car. Yeah, I mean that's gonna damage Ricciardo at some point during the season. He's already on his second engine. So I think he fitted the new MGUH internal combustion engine and something else. I don't quite have the notes in front of me, but that's definitely gonna incur a penalty. Probably, I would imagine before the summer break. I'd be surprised if it wasn't before the summer break. Especially if he continues to have some reliability issues. It was a good job overall from the Red Bull crew. Great job. And actually, he was very lucky to get out in qualifying, because he just came out basically when there was 2 or so minutes left in Q1 and managed to put in a lap. Wasn't a particularly strong lap, but I think he could probably get away with it because there was drivers setting better lap times the second or third time around, and he didn't really have a feel for the tires at that stage, so he did a good job to get through into the final part of qualifying. But I think they came in on lap 18, fitted on the medium tires, did a bit of a risk doing that, but that sort of started to open up the race then, because mm-hmm. that was when Mercedes decided to come into the pits.
Absolutely, they decided to pit Hamilton first, I think, then Bottas. And honestly, I had the feeling Ferrari was sleeping a little bit. You know, they knew how good the undercut would work in China, and they left Vettel and Kimi out. Kimi is another story, but they left Vettel out way too long, in my opinion.
Yeah, they did. And unfortunately for Vettel, that cost him the lead of the race. That must have been
at least they should have pitted him after Hamilton pitted, you know?
Yeah, it would have made sense, because I think Ferrari kind of... Well, I mean, it's very easy in hindsight to say this, but perhaps they could have seen that Bottas was going to pit very soon after that. Vettel lost the lead of the race. Bottas came into first. And yeah, it was a good job by Mercedes to pull that off, but a big punch in the stomach for Ferrari, who were leading the race quite comfortably before that. Vettel, he was able to stick with Bottas anyway for those number of laps, but the pace on the medium tire was quite something. I know Raikkonen was on worn soft tires, but it was very, very quick. Bottas was very quick in closing Raikkonen down, and Vettel was just behind Bottas all the way. And then, Bottas managed to overtake Raikkonen for the lead in quite an impressive move around the outside of turn one. Raikkonen, that was a bit of a strange moment where Raikkonen tried to go back up the inside of turn four and then realized that Vettel was there and he would have had to have let him through. So but I think in all of that there's a big talking point about Ferrari's strategy with Raikkonen. I mean, we know further on into the race something happens that allowed Raikkonen to get back into the race, but they didn't know that the safety car was going to come out. So at that stage I was really wondering, you know, what the hell was Ferrari doing. They were clearly using him as a gate to hold Bottas up and allow Vettel to close in, which is a real shame, because I think Raikkonen's been performing very, very well this season. He's far behind Vettel in the standings through no fault of his own. And I think already it's becoming apparent, if it wasn't apparent already, I mean, we know that Raikkonen has held the number two position at Ferrari since Vettel's been there, but it's kind of a shame to see that that's going to be the same this year, when arguably he's racing at the best he has been since his return to Ferrari in 2014.
Yeah, I'm still struggling a little bit to call it that a clear number two strategy from China. Of course, it was not good for Kimi. On the other hand, I mean, we've seen strategies like that in the past. I can remember 2017 in Barcelona, where Bottas had to stay out a lot longer to block Vettel off, and we had, of course, Australia this season, where Vettel had to stay out just because, well, he needed to do something different, and there it paid off with the safety car. Of course, today it was a little bit of a different story, you know. Kimi lost a lot of time on his worn soft tires, and there wasn't really much to gain. Although you have to say, if he had pitted, he would have come out in P4, possibly P4 around about, and so he came out in P6, maybe with the opportunity to overtake the Red Bulls if Ferrari thought they had the pace. So yeah, it wasn't the optimal strategy for Kimi, but I'm still struggling to say that it is a clear number two at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think you kind of just got to remember that this is Ferrari. They've had number one and two drivers for a long time now. I mean, if we're just going by this century, really, we've had the Schumacher, Barrichello, Alonso, Massa. I mean, even when Alonso and Raikkonen were paired together for a year, I think Alonso was, it was kind of clear, well, Raikkonen, I don't think Raikkonen finished in the top 10 in the standings that year. I mean, that Ferrari was a pretty bad car, but it was clear that Alonso was still the number one at that team that year, even though he was leaving at the end of the year. And the past 3 years, it's been largely Vettel who's had the upper hand on Raikkonen. I mean, of course, there's been some occasions where Raikkonen has been able to outperform Vettel, and I think this year he seems to be a lot closer to Vettel. But I think if you're gonna say that, you gotta say that Bottas definitely does seem a lot closer to Hamilton too this year. And if we're talking about Ferrari versus Mercedes for the championship, you know, number one and number two roles will play a big part in that, because you can use one to hold up the other, as we've seen a couple of times last year. It's going to be interesting to see just how that relationship between Raikkonen and Vettel turns out. I think Raikkonen so far has been pretty happy to play second fiddle to Vettel.
But I think he just doesn't care.
I think if he didn't care, I doubt he'd still be in Formula One. I mean, he still wants to be in Formula One. I imagine. If he didn't want to, he would. I have no doubt that he would quit. But I think if this year, if Raikkonen is as close to Vettel as he has been so far, and he is forced to play, you know, that number two driver role, it'll be a big shame for him. because that's kind of, you know, will he ever, I know it's hard to imagine him actually winning a world championship again, but you know, if he's on the same pace as Vettel, you've got to question, you know, why can't he?
And also a thought that came to my mind is, will he maybe be in a Ferrari 2019 again with that pace?
Yeah, there's a very distinct possibility that he could be in the Ferrari in 2019. Of course, there's going to be some heads knocking, particularly Daniel Ricciardo. But yeah, I mean, with the pace he's shown this year, there's no reason why Ferrari won't want to keep him for next year. But yeah, I think Raikkonen's strategy, it wasn't great overall, especially he came out, I think, a good bit behind Ricciardo, who was in fifth place at that, well, after Raikkonen dropped to sixth, he was a good bit behind Ricciardo too. So yeah, at that stage of the race, it really wasn't working out for Raikkonen.
Yeah, but then the race changed a little bit after both Toro Rossos collided in turn 14 in the hairpin. And yeah, when I first looked at it, I thought, what was Gasly doing there? It looked so strange driving into the back of his teammate. After the race, we learned that Hartley had the order to slow down and let Gasly through at the hairpin. And yeah, maybe Gasly misinterpreted that.
Yeah, they've described it as a miscommunication between the two. A bit embarrassing. I mean, the number one rule is never ever hit your teammate. Yeah. And it was a bit of a really pathetic crash, and one that they really didn't need. And yeah, I mean, what a difference a week makes. Last week out in Bahrain, they were celebrating fourth place, and this time, yeah, they were nowhere really, and Hartley ended up having to retire from the race a couple of laps towards the end. I think he had a gearbox issue, but yeah, that was a very strange incident, and there was a lot of debris left at the hairpin, and that meant that the safety car made an appearance for the first time in the race. There's a I think it was quite a surprise to see it so late on in the race, because China does have a high probability of a safety car, but we got one, and I think Bottas and Vettel were very, very unlucky, because yeah. I think they had just rounded the final corner and the call for the safety car came out, which meant that they couldn't dive into the pits to change their tires.
So you must ask whether they actually considered pitting, whether they had a safety car window for a pit stop, because I think I read that none of the Mercedes had any new soft tires left, and Ferrari, I mean, I'm not sure they didn't pit Kimi, so I'm not even sure if they wanted to pit them at all.
Well, I know that Toto Wolff said that they didn't bring Hamilton in because they believed that track position would be the most important thing, because in the first stage of the race, there wasn't really that much overtaking at all, which is a very good point. But of course, yeah, the two Red Bulls came in for new sets of soft tires, and then yeah, that was really what spiced the race up after that. And yeah, I think after that we definitely had a show.
The race came alive with that. I mean, yeah, let's first talk about the moves of Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, again, that move on Lewis Hamilton with DRS, of course, with slipstream, but he was so far behind. And, you know, it's Lewis Hamilton. It's not like, I don't know, he had a similar overtake on Stroll, I think it was, in Brazil last year. But try and overtake from so far behind and not lock a brake and not lock the tires and make the apex of the corner, I mean, I was really impressed again with that move.
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed. I just wasn't surprised, because we've seen Daniel Ricciardo do this time and time again. I mean, he's probably arguably the best overtaker on the circuit. And I mean, how many times have we seen him pull off that dive bomb up the inside? And we've seen him do it a couple of times when it's failed. I think last year he tried it on Bottas at the US Grand Prix and it didn't come off, but when it does come off, it's absolutely spectacular. I mean, of course, he had fresh tires against Lewis Hamilton's wearing medium tires, but I mean, it was still very impressive to throw it down the inside, not lock a brake, get the car stopped. And yeah, I mean, he was very, very, very far back. And yeah, like I said, I was so impressed. I clapped my hands together actually when I watched it, because I was just astonished that he was able to pull it off. But yeah, I wasn't surprised, because it's it's what Ricciardo was best at.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't surprised either. But I just sat there and shook my head and thought, how are you doing that? You know, it was really impressive, as you said. And then, yeah, even later in the race, he picked up Vettel. Also, that was an easier pass with DRS. But yeah, the last and most important pass, of course, on Bottas. I really hold my breath there, and it was really, really, really close. You know, not only did Bottas close the door, but even before, or when they came closer to the apex, he even narrowed down the line of Ricciardo even more. And I thought, whoa, that was close. That was so close. But I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I mean, Ricciardo went up the inside at turn four, and it sort of seemed that it was going to be pretty even at the apex. But then when Bottas seemed to move over a bit, you could sort of see he was dropping behind, and Ricciardo was able to fly through. And I mean, the onboard from Ricciardo is quite scary. I think that's the angle we've seen it from live, actually. I think we've seen the overtake live on board with Ricciardo, and they were so close to making contact, and that would have been an absolute disaster for both drivers, because they were both driving really, really well up to that stage. And yeah, I mean, that was definitely the most important overtake of the race for Ricciardo, because it promoted him up into the lead, of course. And from there on, I mean, he had great pace. I think he overtook Bottas on lap 45 out of 56, and he ended up finishing 9 seconds ahead of Bottas, so he was nearly a second a lap quicker
and set than the Bottas. Fastest lap.
Yeah, I think the fastest lap was a 1:35.7. So yeah, it was a amazing final portion of the race for Ricciardo to pull off those overtakes and take the lead. But for his teammate, it wasn't such a graceful finish to the race.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, after talking about how you should do it, let's talk about what you shouldn't do when trying to overtake other drivers. I mean, we talked about Max Verstappen a lot during our previous episodes, and yeah, we really talked about how great his overtaking skills are, and sometimes he got it wrong. And this weekend again, he got some decisions very wrong. And if you think about the whole 2018 season, it wasn't really the best start to a season for him at all. You know, Australia, he spun, possibly because of driver error. Of course, he may have had some damage, but in the end, it was him that went into the corner with that particular speed. In Bahrain, he lost it in qualifying, then had contact in the race with Hamilton. Now China, where let's start with the Hamilton move in turn number, I don't know, the first of the long S curves. And yeah, he had a good exit out of turn four, so yeah, the corner must be turn five. He had a good exit out of turn four, wasn't really alongside him, but then decided, I've got new tires, let's try to go onto the marbles and drive around the outside of a four-time world champion. I mean, never in 100 years that would have worked.
No, even with the soft tires, I mean, getting onto the marbles at such a high speed quite dangerous. I mean, maybe he had flashbacks to himself and Ricardo going side by side to the SS in Malaysia a couple of years ago. I think the China S's are a bit tighter.
Actually, a few laps earlier, I think we had Alonso following. Was it a Williams? I can't quite remember, but he was following a car, nearly the same situation. And Alonso, with more experience, he decided, well, I'm not going to overtake there. I just leave it for now and stay behind. You know, and Verstappen didn't do that. Ended up in the grass.
I actually think Alonso, I can't remember if it was at the S's in Malaysia or China. It was one of them anyway, where he tried to make a move around the outside a few years ago. Can't remember what year. It was when he was still with Ferrari, and he ran wide like Verstappen did. That, for some reason, came into my mind when Verstappen did that. But Hamilton gave him a bit of a squeeze, and I thought there actually could have been contact once again between the two of them. I think they were lucky not to get away with it, or to get away with no damage. But then, that unsettled Verstappen's car, sent them wide and across the grass, and ultimately that's what I think cost him the race victory, because that allowed Ricciardo through.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure if Verstappen had just held on, he would have got a better exit than Hamilton, probably. The long right hander that leads onto the straight, and he could have overtaken Hamilton there. I can only assume that he would have, because he was on much fresher tires. He threw away the race win, I think, for himself there. Fell back behind Ricciardo, and he managed to catch up to Hamilton then a few laps later, and then this time pulled off the move at turn four without any trouble.
By the way, fun fact of the day, Verstappen overtook Hamilton three times throughout the race and still finished behind him.
I actually thought of that earlier when I was reviewing the race, but he was chasing after Vettel then, and
oh dear,
I mean, I think we're going to be hearing a lot about that that incident. But why don't you say how you saw it?
Well, it wasn't really like I was. It was strange, you know. You saw both cars coming down the straight, not really in a position for Verstappen to overtake. I thought, maybe next lap, maybe in turn four or something. Vettel ran a bit of a wider line. You know, we saw him do that throughout the weekend, that he sometimes does it if he's not maybe sure that the car will rotate. And Verstappen, I think he said he locked up his rear tires, which meant, and he was a bit too fast, I'm not quite sure, and he decided, well, let's dive into an opportunity that isn't even there. I mean, it looked so strange. And basically his front tire collected Vettel's side pod and also the floor. I saw a picture that there was a big hole in the floor after the race. And it turned both of them around, meaning Hamilton had to go off track. Raikkonen gained a place from that. But, I mean, Verstappen destroyed his race, he destroyed Vettel's race, and it was really, really unnecessary. That is my opinion.
I think it was a bit, it's not funny actually, but Verstappen ended up receiving a 10-second time penalty, and he finished ahead of Lewis Hamilton, but of course the penalty dropped him behind Hamilton, and Verstappen got the penalty for hitting Vettel, but I mean Vettel kind of just lost more points in the championship because of it, because of the penalty, which was supposed to punish Verstappen, because it promoted Lewis Hamilton up to fourth. I think Vettel said that he wasn't going to he wasn't going to put up much of a fight because he knew that Verstappen was likely to get by anyway because he was on fresher tires. And he said that he wasn't putting up much of a fight, but he just didn't expect Verstappen to come. He was expecting Verstappen to overtake, but he didn't expect him to go so late into the corner, which is understandable. And yeah, I think you pretty much said everything. He hit the side pod and spun around, ruining both races and sort of tainting his reputation a bit. I mean, Verstappen has had a really rough start to the 2018 season. He's had that. He had the spin in Australia. He had in Bahrain, he had the incident with Hamilton, and yet again in China, he crashed into Vettel.
If you think everything through, so many points that he threw away there. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he's not really doing himself and Red Bull any favors, and yeah, I think he's still behind Hülkenberg and Alonso in the standings. He said he'll learn from this, and I think it was good that he took the blame for it. I think it was quite, I think whenever we've seen Verstappen sort of have an incident before, I mean, Verstappen's only been in Formula One, what, this is his fourth year in F1,
yeah.
And in those 4 years, you know, he's been involved in a number of incidents. Many of them have involved Vettel. But I think whenever he's been involved in certain incidents, there's nearly always been a sizable group of people that defend him. But I think this is the first time that I can remember where, you know, everybody is just raining down on Verstappen and giving him a lot of grief for this, blaming him entirely. And I think he sort of maybe understands that, and understands that he was in the wrong, and he said himself that it's a learning experience, which is important. But he did say that he doesn't think his driving style needs calming down, which is I don't know, because I think personally, I mean, I'm never in any position to tell a driver, you know, how he should drive, because they're a whole lot better than me at what they do. But I mean, I just don't understand why Verstappen, especially on those moves with Hamilton and Vettel, was so eager to get the move done so quickly, because on both incidents, on both occasions, I mean, it had disastrous consequences for him, and really cost him at a strong result. So hopefully in the future he will learn from it and mature a bit from it.
Nothing to add there. Yeah, good explanation. And yeah, Vettel, yeah, when while recovering from that incident with Verstappen, he lit up his rear tires, and I think that meant that his rear tires were completely gone, no grip at all. And combining that with the broken floor, he had some horrible balance in the car. Lap times were horrible as well. And yeah, Alonso caught him, pushed him off track in turn one. And honestly, I thought that wasn't it was a really bad move from Alonso. Normally, you shouldn't push the driver like that off track. It was kind of an Magnussen move.
Yeah, especially at that corner as well, the way that the entry to the corner is, it's very tight, and he could have very easily spun himself out there. I mean, we've seen, I think that's sort of an Achilles heel for Alonso, if he has one. I think it's when he comes up against Vettel. I think, no, I imagine genuinely being serious. I think Alonso, I think it's no, it's no secret that from what I see, he's not very fond of Vettel. I mean, even there was a Sky Sports feature over the weekend where Zach Brown and Fernando Alonso did an interview in a car, and one of the questions that Zach Brown asked was Fernando or Sebastian Vettel or Lewis Hamilton, and almost instantly he answered Hamilton. And even last year when Hamilton and Vettel were going for the title, he was saying that Hamilton deserves the title more, I think, you know, 2010 and 2012 sort of play on Alonso's mind a lot. Yes. That's only my speculation. But I think, to me, it makes sense. And I think he holds a big grudge against Vettel. And yeah, he never really seems to have much respect for him on the track. And yeah, I think it was a very bold move from Alonso.
And you know what came to my mind? Alonso's team radio, you always have to leave the space. And he didn't leave any space there. And but also I think he knew it is Vettel, and yeah, probably expected him not to crash into him. That's the only... I think he wouldn't have done that move with Verstappen. That's just what I think. But yeah, all in all, a very exciting second half, at least, of the race. And of course, with the winner, I think that everyone can be pleased with, nearly everyone. I mean, Ricardo again, smiling throughout the whole podium ceremony, and was great to watch. And I thought, yeah, we need more people like Danny Ricardo in the world. And yeah, let's hope he can... achieve some more good positions throughout the season, and let's hope that those engine penalties will maybe not come at tracks where overtaking is a bit more difficult than on other tracks. But yeah, let's talk about our driver of the weekend. I have the feeling again that in race three we again might have the same driver as driver of the weekend, and that it might be quite obvious. So what is your, who is your driver of the weekend?
I'm not so sure if it's going to be the same. Maybe it is, but yeah, I mean, there was some pretty good drives throughout the whole field. I think Vettel did really well, grabbed pole position, driving a good race, was kind of done by the undercut of Mercedes, and from there he couldn't really recover. Then he had that incident with Verstappen. Bottas drove well, qualifying his teammate once again for the second time in a row, and his teammate being, of course, Lewis Hamilton, who is, in my opinion, probably the greatest qualifier F1 has ever seen. And yeah, could have won the race, but didn't, of course, because of Ricciardo's strategy. But yeah, my driver of the weekend is not somebody who finished inside the top six. Yeah, I think... I mean, Ricciardo, of course, did a great job with his overtakes, and not taking anything away from him and his spectacular comeback. But you know, one driver that I kind of feel has been so consistent this year so far and is doing an absolutely incredible job is Nico Hülkenberg. Once again, I think for something like the fifth or sixth time in a row, he qualified in P7. Which is quite an impressive record. I qualified Sainz once again, and in the race, drove well, came home in P6, and right now Hülkenberg is seventh in the standings with 22 points. The same
again
as,
seventh.
the exact same amount of points as Alonso. So I think Hülkenberg is driving so well this year. He's really, really enjoying his time at Renault, and he really seems to be heading in the right direction with that team. I kind of feel maybe his performance was a little bit under the radar this weekend, but for me, I think I'm of course Ricciardo, like I said, did an incredible job with his race. Was I qualified by Verstappen once again by a tenth and a half. But yeah, for me, I'm gonna go with Nico Hülkenberg in this one.
Good choice, actually, and also considering that his teammate is Carlos Sainz, who was on pretty similar pace to Max Verstappen, and we all know how much people rate Max Verstappen. So yeah, really good choice, and I can totally understand it. And for me, it's more the obvious choice. For me, it's Danny Ricciardo, because, well, those moves in the race were just incredible. And also in qualifying, I mean, you talked a little bit about it. With 2.5 minutes to go, he made it out in Q1, put a lap in that is enough to get him through. And then kind of adjust himself and also the car, the balance, so that he can actually fight for some good positions, and then only to be 1.5 tenths off Verstappen, I thought was really a good achievement by him. And yeah, as I said, a really good race. So my driver of the weekend is definitely Danny Ricciardo. So, and to end this episode, also we do have this new for this year, we do have a rating where we rate the different races, which one we like the best. And of course you can track all our choices and podium predictions, where, as I said in the beginning, nobody of us got anything correct. Yeah, what was your I just want to say where you can check it out. It's fastestlappodcast.com/stats. So race rating, Vogel, what's your opinion? You rated the Bahrain GP 7.5, if I remember correctly. So what's your rating for China?
Yeah, actually, I just want to go back to our podium predictions from last week. I actually said Hamilton, Vettel, Raikkonen. And Raikkonen actually did finish third in the race.
Oh, so okay.
There we go. I get a point.
Damn it.
But... yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to exactly judge the Chinese Grand Prix, because the first 35 laps were pretty dull, but then, yeah, the rest of the race was very, very good. I mean, we rated the Bahrain Grand Prix 7.5, well, I rated it, sorry, 7.5 out of 10, and, yeah, I'm kind of judging. I think last time I was sort of judging whether to go with a 7 or an 8, and I'm kind of the same this time, but a 7 seems a bit low, especially for the amount of action, the amount of exciting action that we had at the front between all six of the top drivers. So I think I would probably go for a 7.5 once again.
Okay.
But yeah, it was definitely a fantastic race towards the end, but perhaps, you know, the first 35 laps there was nothing really happening, which slightly dampened the score. But yeah, I absolutely loved watching the race. So yeah, I think I'm just going to go with a 7.5 once again.
Yeah, it was a pretty difficult choice, I agree, as you said, especially comparing it to Bahrain, which was kind of a different race, because yeah, there we had a lot more strategy elements going on, and the race lived from the suspense of will the tires last to the end, will it not, and so on. And here we had just more plain action, to put it that way. Some crashes, some great overtakes, and what really I think made the race was that the first six cars were really close throughout the whole race. And yeah, for me as well, I thought something between 7 and 8, but as we had, or as I had, Bahrain with a 7, I thought maybe 7.5, but then again, I think it was a really good race. I really enjoyed it. So for me, the Bahrain GP gets an 8. So yeah, some really good races this season, excluding Australia maybe, but yeah, a lot to look forward to. So when is the next GP? Baku, Azerbaijan, when is it on? Is it in 2 weeks' time?
In 2 weeks, yeah, the 29th of, well, the Grand Prix is on the 29th of April. The action starts on the 27th, and I think if this year's race is at least half as chaotic as last year's one, we'll still be in for a fantastic race. But yeah, I think, you know, next week we'll be previewing that episode, or that race.
Absolutely, yes, and surely I'll be watching the GP2 race, the F2 race for Baku, because that was really exciting last year as well. So until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.